Hi guys, today we're at the Ace Cafe with Mark and Lembe and from the Motorcycle Action Group, and Mark is from the Ace Cafe. Now, I've been covering ULEZ a lot, and I've been covering it obviously in a motoring context because I'm a car guy, I'm the brown car guy, so I've talked a lot about cars. But many people have said, well, you haven't talked about bikes. How does it affect bikes? Well, I've got two guys that can completely answer all of those questions. These are the experts, these are the people that will know exactly how the forthcoming ULEZ zone, the expansion, the ultra low emission zone that should be taking place from August the 29th is going to impact bikes. Welcome guys.
Great to be here.
Thank you so much for joining me this morning. First of all, introduce yourself. I think that's probably the best way to start.
Well, my name's Mark Wilsmore, and I'm the MD here at Ace Cafe London.
Yeah.
So in some ways I could say that I straddle the two, bikes and cars. But it is in that order, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Sorry, car guys. It's bikes and cars.
Yeah.
Lembit, who I know does drive a car,
yeah,
but he is our man, our go-to guy,
yeah,
as it were, when it comes to fighting all sorts of headaches. And of course, the one we have today is pollution,
yeah,
which I would suggest starts with Alfred the Great burning the cakes. However, yes. Over to Lembit.
Yeah, thanks for that unusual introduction.
Indeed.
I'm Lembit Opec. I'm Director of Communications and Public Affairs for the Motorcycle Action Group, which is really the voice of motorcyclists in the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
I've been working there for over a decade now, and really getting parity of esteem for bikers for the simple reason that we've got millions of people with a motorcycle license in the country. It's got a tiny environmental footprint, it reduces congestion, and we get persecuted.
So before we get into the detail of how ULEZ impacts bikes, just to continue a little bit more on you guys and your background, I mean, you were an MP, and you were talking about the needs of motorcycles at parliamentary level, right?
Yeah, I've actually been a motorcyclist since 1980, and I've owned bikes continuously for over four decades now. So it's a passion for me, and I'm one of those people who has the privilege of turning my passion into a career.
Yeah.
I was the chair of the all-party motorcycle group when I was in Parliament as well. And I really brought MAG in from the cold because they were outliers. They weren't really in the political system and they had to be there. And then organically, after I left Parliament, I was invited to apply for a job in MAG and I've been there ever since. Why? Because we have to have a political presence, otherwise policy is done to us instead of being driven by us.
You know, this is a major point, and it's a major point for me as well, and I've spoken to a few people about this as well, that I don't feel that at the top levels of government and authority that we have people that are petrol heads, car guys, bikers, who can really empathize with what this is all about, you know? Do you think that that's something that's really lacking in government today?
Yes, and Mark can give you a very good example, historical example from his life experience on this. The problem we've got is we don't have experts in subject areas running the country. And that's actually a problem across the whole of the cabinet.
Yeah.
They say things like, you did a great job in defense, so we'll give you health.
Yes.
How can you do that? Oh, you're a good train driver, so why don't you fly a plane?
Yes.
And this is exactly what's happening with road policy. So we essentially get idiotic virtue signaling nonsense by people who haven't got a clue about the science, about the practicalities, and about the needs of the general public.
Yes.
Most of whom, surprise, surprise, don't earn what an MP earns.
Yeah.
And they ride their 90cc Honda because it does 110 miles per gallon. And now they're going to be faced with huge taxes because somebody thinks incorrectly, by the way, that taxing these vehicles will make our health better. So at the heart of government, we have ignorance.
Yeah.
And it's now practically persecuting road users as if we have to apologize for having an internal combustion engine.
Well, it seems that we are required to apologize. Mark, ULEZ obviously expanded last, what was it, in 2021, wasn't it, up to North and South Circulars, right? And obviously we're sitting right on the Ace Cafe, sits right on the edge of that boundary. Do you find that it impacted you and the Ace Cafe and all the crazy and wonderful activities that you do here?
Absolutely. From the perspective today, with the proposed extension likely to be going ahead, it would seem, people often ask, how is it going to affect us, this extension? Because once it is extended, we will be in it. I do remark, 9 times out of 10, with the observation, well, it's already affected us.
Right.
Because because the vast majority of people out who come here from outside of London presume that we're in it in any case. And oft as not, when you dig a little deeper, that lack of knowledge that Lembit just referred to extends all the way all the way through society, yeah. not just at the top end of it. And my sort of following on again from Lembit's comments there, it's my view that it seems that, you know, the primary interest of government is to remain in government,
yeah.
And how they do that all through history,
yeah.
All through recorded history, is divide and rule. So we'll set this lot against that lot, etc., etc.
Yeah.
And this seems to be exactly that which is unfolding, not just with you, Leslie, if I might say, but across a whole host of aspects of our society.
There seems to be a lot of bandwagon jumping when it comes to government and people in power. Particularly, I mean, recently you, the Motorcycle Action Group, in association with Fairfuel UK and Alliance of British Drivers, put out this fantastic report, Cradle to Grave. And we looked at how the EVs compare with ICE cars over the entire period of their life cycle. And when you start to look, when you really start to delve, and okay, maybe this, maybe some of it is not correct, maybe some of it is correct, but when you start to delve into it, you realize that actually there's so much more, there's so much more complex than simply saying EVs are better.
I'm a specialist when it comes to transport. I have been really all my life. Mm-hmm. I used to run an airline, actually, and I've done it always on the basis of economics and science, two things that seem to be missing in government at the moment.
Yeah.
Turning to the Cradle to Grave report, it's an absolute case study of what's going wrong in our political system. When you compare electric vehicles, EVs for short, with internal combustion engine vehicles, ICE vehicles for short, it very quickly becomes obvious, number one, that it takes a lot more CO2, carbon dioxide, to build an electric vehicle than the equivalent petrol car.
Yeah.
Then secondly, because we don't have a green grid, you're still producing CO2 in order to create the electricity. And there's a third point here. CO2 doesn't actually do any harm.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not supposed to say that because it's against the zeitgeist.
Well, you'd be a climate denier. That's what you'd be called.
But they're the climate deniers because they think they can stop climate change. Climate has always changed, and it's not driven by carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
We used to have 90 times the atmospheric density that we have now,
right.
And it was almost all CO2.
Right.
If there was going to be a runaway greenhouse effect, it would have happened billions of years ago, and it didn't.
Yeah.
So all of this is going wrong.
Yeah.
Our Cradle to Grave analysis puts the figures in front of anyone who can be bothered to read it.
Yeah.
And if somebody's got better figures, we'll change the report.
Yeah.
But they don't come back. They'll simply sweep it away or do the thing that is the worst thing that's happening at the moment. They cancel people like me for speaking out against it because it's easier to shut me up rather than shut down my argument.
So for the benefit of, I know people are going to comment on this, are you anti-EV?
No, I'm not against it.
This is the thing, and I'm the same. And like, it's one of the things I keep saying. I get people commenting saying, oh, you're anti-EV. I'm not. I've reviewed so many of them. I think they're fantastic vehicles. We've got electric charger right here at the Ace Cafe, and we're sitting opposite right now.
I have an electric bicycle, and for short journeys, I use that because it's just less of a faff than walking, and I don't want to get my car out or get all my bike gear on. So we're not against, Mike isn't against electric vehicles. We're against compulsion and enforcing a technology which has a limited value, but not for long distance and not for heavy lifting, not for high torque applications like pulling a caravan. So the problem is we've now got this virtue signaling nonsense coming out from government and coming out from people like Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, which tells us things which are not based in any way on fact.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure Mark will agree, he welcomes electric vehicles here.
Yeah, well,
but it's just charger
the right there. Yeah.
Indeed, the electric vehicles are quite extraordinary acceleration.
Yeah.
And I have had some experience with different other bikes in particular that come here, and I'll name them Zero Bikes.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant, the performance. I do miss the sound, I must confess. It's a bit like having a steak for me. You need to hear the sizzle of it as well, the smell and taste.
Yeah.
But with electric, again, the fantastic concept machine, which your viewers may like to see, Triumph have developed, their TE1 bike.
Yeah.
Stunningly beautiful, in my view, motorcycle that happens to be electric.
Yeah.
We look forward to that being on the roads. But with the things, again, touching on Lembit, disjointed thinking, disjointed legislation, disjointed powers devolved to people or bodies, you have a circumstance where, for us here, electric cars and bikes are welcome.
Yeah.
but people with electric scooters, the youngsters, some of these scooters of which you'll see around London can whiz along at sort of 70 mile an hour, there's absolutely no legislation around it. And we've been, I want to say, lent on to say they can't come here. Yet at the same time, the estates that are going up around us, and your camera can't get them from the angle we're sat at.
No, no.
But huge new developments.
Yeah, and Wembley is massive. Wembley is completely transformed over there, yeah.
Have in mind that legislation, that's legislation from government, yeah. You know, local authorities implement what they're given powers to do within that legislation. For every three dwellings, one parking place.
Yeah.
So it seems to me, similarly with the carriageway and 20 mile an hour and all that as we have across this city, that actually the private ownership of vehicles, whether they're powered by electric or ICE, internal combustion, have been designed out of the equation.
Yeah.
So you, Liz, it seems to me, is only a part of a much bigger picture that is not, I'd say, the elephant in the room almost. So it will be okay, I suspect, into the future, where we wind up with almost like in communist Soviet era, where the party officials can use the carriageway, they can have a car, it'll be the chief exec in charge of NHS area X, he will have, it's a disjointed system that is going to take us into a rather an unpleasant world, it seems. But on the whole, through organisation like MAG, which is 50 years old this year, been fighting all sorts of legislation over the years, it would seem voices of the, I'd say us, the mass, are starting to be heard. And so, yeah, keep the pressure up, MAG, and keep the pressure up, Brown Car Guy.
Thank you. A brown car guy. Let's bring it back to Ulez. Well, you touched on Ulez, you touched on Sadiq Khan, and let's talk about bikes, because one thing that I haven't been able to tell people is exactly the very basics of how does it affect bikes, and which bikes does it affect?
Let's get completely to the basics here. Not everyone's heard of Ulez. It stands for Ultra Low Emission Zone, and it's a tax on vehicles which produce an emission called NOx, nitrogen oxides, basically.
It's based on NOx, but it's also based on particulate emissions, 2.5 and 10.
No, it's not. That's one of the misunderstandings.
Right.
It's literally only about nitrogen oxides, nothing else, not about particulate matter. Even Sadiq Khan gets mixed up about this.
Yeah.
But it's, at the moment at least, just about NOx.
So this is the ULEZ or this is the Euro standards?
The ULEZ, Ultra Low Emission Zone, it only measures that.
Okay, because the Euro standards, that encompasses both, doesn't it? The Euro 6, the Euro 5, the Euro 4, they encompass both, don't they?
Yeah, now we get a bit more complicated, because in order to get an exemption for your old bike, you only have to prove that it doesn't produce NOx. Now, there's a bit of a debate about that, but that's essentially the reality.
Okay.
So, ironically, even though...
Does this differ from cars? Because with cars, you have to get both of those readings.
The problem is it's a bit of a grey area. If you get the NOx down, then you're really actually untouchable, even in a car.
Right.
And there's one place that does motorbikes in London, and as long as you get that pass, then you should be all right. But maybe we don't need to get into that detail.
Right.
Maybe it's too much detail. What people need to remember is it's about what comes out your exhaust.
Yeah.
That's basically what we're talking about. And so don't worry too much about the NOx.
So how do we understand which bikes are affected and which are not?
Well, this is where it gets interesting.
Okay.
You can get a certificate of conformity, COC, and it can show you that you're below the level of whatever we're having to measure here.
Yeah.
You don't really need to be an expert on that. You just have to be able to show it.
The certificate of conformity comes from the manufacturer of the bike.
It does.
But before we get into certificate of conformity, so for example, with cars, you say that, well, if it's 2015 on diesel, it should be fine.
Yeah.
If it's genuinely 2005 on petrol, it should be fine. How does it work with bikes?
Right, it's the same. It's the same.
But there's no diesel except...
There's no diesel bikes, really. There's probably about five in the country, and they're all bespoke.
Okay.
So modern vehicles already have this built into the thing that you get when you buy it. A certificate of conformity is something you can get retrospectively for the kind of older vehicles that are behind us here, but you have to pay for that.
Yes.
But if you haven't got that and you haven't got the test, you're presumed guilty.
Right.
Guilty of these mysterious omissions.
Yeah.
And you simply have to pay it.
Right.
What does that look like in real life? Now, maybe that's a bit technical, yeah. what I've said. In real life, that means if you have a 90cc Honda,
yeah.
which is 30 years old and does 120 miles per gallon,
yeah.
you have to pay £12.50 a day
yeah.
to ride it in the ultra-low emission zone. £12.50 a day for a vehicle which you've been commuting on for 50p a day. And essentially what this does, it creates 500,000 tons of junk out of these older vehicles because no one's going to pay that.
No, no, let's not do that. But the thing is, when it comes to bikes, and like you said, I mean, the economy that you get out of it, the use that you get out of it, are bikes really contributing to, forget about the environmental impact, but the toxic air quality issue?
It's unmeasurable. I've seen work that came out of one of the universities in London, mm-hmm. utter trash. Mm-hmm. They were claiming they could prove that motorbikes were producing emissions in one street when they weren't even measuring it there. They were measuring it next to a yeah. railway line. Mm-hmm. The whole thing is hyped up nonsense. Ironically, motorcycles actually reduce emissions mm-hmm. because if you have a 125, or the average CC in London is 175, if you added all that, that's going to produce much less than a 2-litre car, for example, and it reduces congestion, which means you've got fewer cars sitting in line. Other problem here, which ULEZ doesn't touch, mm-hmm. is the fact that you've got a big, heavy electric car. It produces more particulate matter from yeah. its tyres and its yeah. brakes yeah. than the petrol equivalent.
Yeah.
And here's a third irony. The great Sadiq Khan tells us that particulate matter, and yeah. he gets mixed up on this,
yeah.
is killing us.
Yeah.
But he wants us to go in the underground, where it's 1,400 to 1,800% yeah. higher. So he actually has three options. Shut down the underground,
yeah.
pay millions of pounds of compensation, or admit that he's lying.
Yeah.
Those are the only three ways he can remain consistent here.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll come to Mark in a minute. I just want to add about the underground situation, because I have created these videos where I've gone around with an air quality meter, and the underground is absolutely shocking. I was talking to Howard Cox yesterday, and he was saying that, look, there are ways that we can clean that up. So when you talk about the 300 plus million that's being spent on the ULEZ expansion, surely it's better to spend that on trying to clean up the underground, say.
I'll say just one thing on this. I don't believe particulate matter is killing people in London. Mm. There'll be one or two hypersensitive individuals, yeah. and we have to take that seriously.
Yeah.
But the overwhelming proportion of the human race yeah. is not being affected yeah. by the air because it's clean enough.
Yeah.
And as for NOx, there was a piece of research which I found
yeah.
which measured people who cook with gas
yeah.
when you produce tons of NOx in your kitchen
yeah.
and people who cook with electric.
Yeah.
There was no difference in the health. There was right. no difference in life expectancy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I challenge anybody
yeah.
to show me scientific proof, not of this extrapolated hype that yeah. nonsense, because it's a lie.
Yeah.
It's not 4,000 people who die from this.
No,
it's a made-up figure. Sure. I challenge them to show anything at all which explains that this does more good than harm. It doesn't. It's a tax on the poor. And when it comes to bikers, it's essentially turning these great machines into junk.
Yeah.
Now that's an environmental cost, and it's a social cost.
No, I agree. So Mark, look, you know, you have a lot of bikers that come here. So in real terms, in practical real terms, when you've spoken to people about ULEZ, how is it affecting people? Are they having to change bikes? What are they doing?
It's certainly changing people, but it does break down into different demographics. Mm-hmm. So, figure as a destination venue. That is where we're hosting, as you'll be aware, various car meets
yeah.
and various bike meets similarly. Now, people would come here from not just this, around this country, mm-hmm. but also from overseas
yeah.
as a destination, not visiting the Tower of London
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
And
in fact, I was here a couple of weeks ago with a friend of mine visiting from Pakistan who was
indeed.
Very keen to
Jay
come
Leno
here.
Pakistani
Jay Leno, yeah.
Absolutely extraordinary, and what a guy. He is a dead ring for Jay Leno. Yeah. He's got all the interests that
he is. He's a restorer, he's a collector, he's a bike enthusiast, he's incredible. Yeah.
What a wow guy as well. Real privilege to have met him. Thank you for that. But yeah, so you know that
yeah.
from your own experience as a destination. But where it's slight changes, as it were, is we have a plethora of largely youngsters mm. traversing London day in and day out, delivering stuff, mm. big old top boxes,
yes.
Whether it's food, packages,
yeah.
the urgent pizza and tin of Coke yeah. that's got to get through.
Yeah.
And so there's this massive, massive number of lightweight machines whizzing about. many of whom are only on L plates, another completely barking bit of, in my view, missing legislation. You know, to drive a forklift truck on private premises, you have to have done some sort of course, but you can just get an L plate, stick it on your bike, do your
off you go,
whiz around and be at risk out on the roads. So yeah, we host all sorts of different demographics. Yeah. And across those demographics, there is those who use their two-wheelers, in this instance, as a machine by which they make a living. That's largely from the experience I have here in London.
Yeah.
London-based youngsters on the lightweight stuff. My age group, typically, the larger numbers, are coming from the suburbs of London or beyond to visit us in particular as a destination venue rather than just calling for a coffee on the way, dropping off something else. Those people are all convinced, many of them rather, are all convinced we're already in ULEZ.
Right.
And yes, we certainly do have a fear as a business that once it does come in, it will affect us. But as I've already said, I think the greatest effect has already happened when it initially came in.
So can I ask? So you've very clearly and very kindly described two different demographics. What is the impact on each of those demographics of the current ULEZ situation? So, for example, the younger people with the delivery bikes and stuff, are those bikes affected by ULEZ?
I suspect not. Lembit may have better knowledge.
Because they're generally newer and they're smaller, right? But and what about this community, though? Because they tend to have classic bikes and specialist bikes.
Classics, if it's over 40 years old, you might have to do certain things and fill in a form or two.
Right. Yeah, you have to register it as a historic vehicle.
That you're outside of it at present. I suspect in to the future you won't be. There'll be we'll have them and all in 5 years' time. But for sure, at the present, over 40 years old, you're regarded as I think it's a historic vehicle. I think the term they use. Then there's the very modern stuff, Euro. I think six. I'm looking at Lembit there. They're not affected.
So from what year was Euro 6 on bikes? Do we know?
Motorbikes are a little bit behind. Sorry. Yeah. Motorbikes are a few years behind the conditions for cars. It was a kind of exemption.
Okay.
But in practice, the big problem, as Mark's saying, isn't the historic ones, it's the bit in between.
Yes, yes. But so this is what I'm trying to get at. So what is the margin where people fall into that gap?
Well, it depends on which manufacturer you're talking about, but let's say it's something like from 15 years to 40 years, say 20 to 40 years.
Right.
And that's going to make junk of the classic sector because who's going to wait 20 years so that they can start using their bike in London again?
Yeah, yeah.
So they become junk in London.
So we're talking about 2008, 2009 kind of onwards is okay, but earlier than that,
maybe
problematic.
Maybe before then, actually.
So what can people do? Can they also go online and check whether their bike is compliant or not?
They can, but that's a mess too.
That's a mess too, okay.
And it's essentially, the way to look at it, the simplest way to think about this is your Honda C50, 50cc, 25-year-old moped will fail unless you go and get it tested.
Right.
So then you're going to incur £12.50 a day for a vehicle which costs about 6p a mile to use.
Right.
And as Mark says, there's no incentive for those vehicles to happen anymore, and Mark also rightly points out they'll just keep trying to virtue signal their way to ever stricter rules.
So where can people get that test done?
Well, locally here, say to London, my recollection is one place off to the west of here, there's another one just outside of London, I think in Stevenage, and certainly in the motorcycle press and mag websites you'll find
you
all
find
that kind of
okay,
thing.
Okay, so
the other bit that I think is of merit to mention is how the history of legislation around motor vehicles is quite interesting. And one of those interesting bits is the story of the MOT, which, if I'm not mistaken, came out in 1960, and when introduced, it applied to vehicles 10 years old and older. Of course, there's, like we are today, a great big moan about, this is outrageous, because it swept thousands and thousands of vehicles off the roads.
Uh-huh.
And people couldn't work it, many couldn't work it out. But of course, having, I want to say, got away with that, government then decided to reduce the years that they went past and add things to the MOT requirement. Broadly, with a view to keep us all safer and all that, but it's also helped drive the manufacturing base at that time to get factories going, giving people work. So it's like a double-edged thing, which then gets added to at, in that era of let's get rid of the railways, basically. So it's a program to get us all into cars, blow the railway, don't want that. And now we're into another phase of societal change where, oh, the railways are wonderful, let's all get on the railways and drive cars off the road.
Well, I mean, we've seen something similar in motoring, haven't we? Because, you know, 15, 20 years ago, they told us all to move to diesels, and now, like, oh, no, that's a bad idea. And one wonders if the EV thing is going to end up in the same cycle. But I want to touch on a different thing. Again, comparing to what's happening in the car arena, for example, is that currently, if you try to sell a non-ULEZ compliant car, you're going to lose money, and it's going to cost you more to buy a car that is ULEZ compliant. Is it the same with bikes at the moment? Have we seen this discrepancy in value?
Effectively, yes, and certainly the one I like to rate, because what we're facing here in London, we're speaking of, is really a societal thing, and of course they've got it all across Europe in different forms and called different things, but in essence the same policies have been affected all across Europe. Which, of course, if I'm not mistaken, when Boris was the mayor, he was the great Europhile that was advocating alignment. So you go any city in Europe, you'll find the same footpath arrangements, the same bollard, the same to the bollards. But it is having the same effect, because I have a dear friend who I was only with the other week in Germany, who kindly picked me up on his very old Honda ST that, in terms of city use, it can't be. It's, you know, it's a awful, dreadful piece of two-wheeler engineering, etc., etc. And they're cheap. I can't remember how much he paid for it. I was stunned. There's this absolutely nothing much wrong with it at all bike that could go on probably for another 30 years that no one, this is Jeremy I'm speaking of, can sell. So yeah, we've got that to come, I suspect. Brown
car guy. So another issue that's facing, for example, motorists with cars, is the concept of now emissions-based parking. And somebody was telling me earlier that in Hackney and places like that, it's also affecting bikes as well.
Well, there's lots of things that affect bikes, and that includes, as you were just describing, the parking. And thankfully, we have organisations in the motorcycling world, such as MAG, who have to fight these disparate battles all across, in this instance speaking of London MAG, all across London, because regulatory powers and policies set by government have been such that councils can pretty much do what they like and do different things in the different boroughs. So there's, I'm going to say, a divide and rule policy laid out by central government just to confuse and get us all at each other's throats. But the upshot is, indeed, some boroughs you can go into red routes, for instance, and bus lanes, beg your pardon, what am I saying? Bus lanes you can use, other boroughs you can't. Parking is quite good for motorcycles in one borough, not in another. Different pricing, it's completely crackers. But Lembit's are really at the sharp end of all that.
And it also sounds to me, Lembit, like it's a whole barrel of confusion for people out there. You know, I'm not surprised now that so many people have commented about, can you give us clarification on bikers? Because bikers must be very confused right now.
Yeah. You can ride through London from one borough to the next in the bus lanes, and it's fine until you go through this invisible barrier to the next borough, and then you get a ticket. Now, Sadiq Khan, when he was still being nice to bikers, said he would try and get us into all the bus lanes. He hasn't done anything, as far as I can see, to help with that. Then there's the parking.
Yeah.
In Hackney, they wanted to charge us £6 an hour to park
for
our
bikes,
yes. And now, thanks to Mag's work, I can't take credit, but the London team, it's £6 a day, but it's still a ridiculous amount of money for a congestion-busting piece of technology, which is a powered two-wheeler. And then we've got the ULEZ, which is just a tax on the poor, including bikers. And then we've got a whole bunch of other really confusing things like low traffic neighbourhoods.
Yes, of course,
Where we're supposed to all be athletic enough to walk and cycle, even though my late mother couldn't possibly have gone more than 50 metres in the last days. And it all comes out from this little clique of cyclist, fanatic, or TFL people.
I'm going to be very cheeky and interrupt there. Those neighbourhood things, that all came out from central government. Local authorities, they needed dough.
They're running the
whatever they can to get their mitts on a bit of dough.
Yeah.
And government then goes, oh, that's down to you lot.
Yeah.
And it's like...
Because it's being rolled out in Oxford and places like that as well. The other thing I want to ask you about, though, is the 20 miles per hour limits. I mean, in a car, that's extremely painful. What is it like on a bike?
You don't want to go there. That is horror. utter horror.
Yeah.
Not only is it a challenge at that low speed, what has absolutely changed in my experience of going into the centre of London, in the 20 mile an hour bit, is people on... push bikes, people on skateboard, electric things.
They're going quicker.
And walking. No, not just that. But just ambling all over the road, oblivious to vehicles like motorbikes or cars.
Yeah.
Absolutely oblivious. Many of course, with modern technology, they've got the old earpiece for the mobile or listening to music or something. It is a dramatic change so that, in essence, people have the priority over the vehicle, and actually it's probably not a bad idea to think that there's a logic, but the outcome it's torment. It's utter torment.
And I do have more criticism of councils, because they don't have to do this, and if they were serving their publics, then they wouldn't introduce low traffic neighbourhoods where the majority of people don't want them. And so there is essentially a collusion between central government and low traffic neighbourhoods, but it's all on the basis of this active travel agenda, which is run by a very small clique of people, not by the majority. No disabled pensioner is going to say, actually, I want you to take my parking space away, and you're going to make me walk to the local shops. 15-minute cities, another pernicious way to try to control the public.
Yeah.
So what's it like for a biker? Well, as Mark says, you try riding a 1300cc motorbike at 20 miles per hour, you'll be in second gear.
Yeah.
Or maybe first.
We've been designed out of the equation.
We are. It's horrendous.
It's all they, though.
It's very, very difficult. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, like, even my E30 driving that at 20, it doesn't want to do 20, you know?
Just think of the fuel consumption increase as well.
It doesn't like it.
It's just the whole thing's rubbish.
Yeah.
A little bit like when they made us have a bit more biofuel in the petrol. It's got something what's called a lower energy density. It carries less energy. So you have to use more of it.
Yeah,
and that increases emissions.
That's right. That's
None
right,
of it makes any sense. And that's
right.
Where we started. The fact is that this alleged, in my view, ridiculous idea that our tiny contribution of CO2 is wrecking the climate, it's all about some kind of a bigger agenda to control us.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we wrap up this fantastic discussion that we've had, what is your advice collectively to bikers and the bike community out there right now?
Motorcyclists in particular should join MAG, support MAG in fighting these so important battles.
And thanks, Mark. That's true. Anybody who cares about their liberty, because that's what the battle's about, that's what the war's about here, is to stand up and say, in line with something called Operation Earthquake that MAG's running, if you want to take our internal combustion engines away, you're not getting our vote. Whatever your party, you're not getting our vote. Look at the science, look at the economics, and just remember one thing. We're meant to live in a democracy, which means they don't rule us.
Yeah.
They serve us,
and
it's about time they started. That's what Motorcycle Action Group wants to do with Operation Earthquake.
And actually, we saw that, didn't we, recently in Uxbridge, where people made their voices very clearly heard.
There is hope. Even though the Conservative government is desperately unpopular at the moment, it turns out that ULEZ expansion is hated even more than the Tories, because it was clearly a referendum on Sadiq Khan to attempt to expand ULEZ right up to here. And the public said no.
Yeah.
If he carries on with it now, he can never again even pretend that he cares about what the majority of people in this city think. This is Sadiq Khan's poll tax. If he wants it so badly, then he must accept there's a very good chance he won't be mayor in 12 months' time.
I agree with you. So just to wrap up, where can people find you guys?
Well, as we've already remarked, Ace Cafe London, we have a website, but we're on the North Circular by Stonebridge, Wembley, North London. Mag,
you also
all
have
over
them,
the country.
But you also have international franchises as well. Where are they?
Oh my goodness, you got me. I tried to think. Right, Finland, Switzerland, Malaysia. Yes, we have a licensee in Japan. Oh my goodness.
Look it up on the website. I want to go to Ace Cafe Malaysia one day. That would be awesome.
And Mag's all over the country. Sure. But yeah, go to the website, speak to Lembit.
Yeah, all you have to do is put in Motorcycle Action Group. Yeah. We'll be top of any search engine. And you can contact me. I'll help in any way you can. And let's be clear, this is actually a war on our civil liberties. Yeah. It happens to be now manifested about rights of bikers and car drivers and the rights of people to ride here without being taxed.
Yeah.
But this is the battle royale we're facing in this country now.
Lembit, Mark, thank you so much for joining me today.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed that video. If you did, please hit the like button and share this video as well if you can. And while you're at it, check out these guys who also sponsor my content. I am deeply grateful to them because it helps me to buy new equipment, put fuel in the cars, and yes, buy a cup of coffee. You can do the same. Just go here or right here on YouTube. Just hit these three little dots down here and click on thanks. Make sure you're signed in first. My content is free, but this is how you can help me keep it that way. I may even send you a gift. Oh, by the way, watch this next.